people want to believe. Change is constant, coming from anywhere and everywhere. We find ourselves pondering unseen, eternal realities, awakening our capacity to believe. This is Know God.
You are listening to the Know God podcast. I am Micah, as always, and I am here with...
your mom, Sandy. Aww.
And your dad, Tony.
Yes. Is there anyone else in the room?
Well, there is. We have a studio guest today.
Yeah.
I was wondering who you had in the corner over there.
We do. Al is here, and he is just wanting to see how this works. And so we are glad to have him here.
All right. If we get off track, you can just yell at us. So what do we got for today? We've been doing awe.
We've been doing awe and having actually a wonderful time doing that. Amazing. And we've had some people respond to that. Nice. So that's pretty cool. But today, because this is going to be our last podcast on this, at least in this little series. And it occurred to me that we miss awe opportunities for awe a lot, partly because we don't set ourselves up for it. Put ourselves in positions to experience awe, or we don't pay attention to what's going on around us. And I was thinking, there's a lot of things in the Bible. We talked about Bible stuff last week, and we've noted Keltner's stuff, Dr. Keltner, who wrote a book on awe and did about not quite 30 years of research to write that book with a team. And in that, I was thinking, you know, they interviewed people that just were talking about their life and how they would say, so did you experience this? And so in that, we talked about the eight pathways to awe, which he doesn't say it's only eight, but it's the top eight. And so in that, he was talking about the moral beauty of people. And I'm just going to do these real quickly because you can listen to another podcast to hear this. Some people experience awe very easily in nature. Collective effervescence, like watching a Super Bowl together. That would be collective effervescence for people to have that. And in fact, I'd say that in that kind of thing where it's a, you know, digital medium coming to people, they might think they're going to see the awe mainly on the screen, but actually there may be awe in the room that, you know, how people are relating and experiencing that together. Then music, which includes dance, movement and such, visual design, spiritual and religious awe, which is kind of in the heart of what we're doing. Big ideas of life and death. Again, that plays in. And then what he calls epiphany.
Right.
It's a discovery, like the pieces come into place and it's like something you didn't expect to understand. All of a sudden you have a new understanding or a new concept about it. There are other things, but he's just talking about, these are the top ones that over the people that they had talked to around the world, these tended to be how they categorized.
If I remember right, you were talking about how one of the keys is almost always awe happens with people.
With people. And it can be alone, but even as we pointed out with Double Rainbow Guy, it was because he was sharing it on social media. That was him sharing it with people.
That instinct to want to share it, to want other people to come and see it.
Right. And so those are the moments of awe that are things. And again, I would, if someone really wants to, they could just read through a lot of Bible narratives and look for the experiences of awe in the, as it's recorded. Obviously, not every story is going to record that, but there are plenty that do.
Right.
And again, I think that if someone's looking for a fresh approach to Bible reading, they're just kind of like, well, I've done this, I've done that. Maybe just reading as a survey to find awe and kind of looking at these categories. So again, I think it can enrich our spiritual lives. But so the last week it actually wasn't even last week for us. And it may have been just like the podcast you just listened to talked about how we picked out a handful of Bible stories and we showed that awe. Again, referencing that in the New Testament anyhow, and with the Greek language, awe is, you know, we don't look for just the word awe, because in the New Testament and most current translations, the word that is translated awe is often phobos, which is the word fear, phobia, that word. And I think that actually stumps us a little bit, because we think, well, awe is not just fear. I mean, it could be, but that's certainly not one of the categories of Dr. Keltner.
Right.
And even more so, then the translations use that. And then older translations like the King James and such would actually have used the word fear or terrified or afraid, something like that. And so that's really the first meaning of phobos. But awe comes into play because awe is something we experience that was not expected. And at times that frightens us. And so that, I think that's the association there. But the words, so phobos is one of them. It's respect is fear. Second, or another word is, and I'm just using the English transliterations, ecstatic, which is ecstasy, mm-hmm. which is the distraction, the confusion, the astonishment. It's like that rise, you could say that it's part of the adrenaline rush or something, but the rise that is toward terror, could be trance, could be ecstasy. All those things are behind that Greek word, but it's just being amazed and being astonished. And so that's how and it's not a word that's used a lot in the New Testament, but it's there. Paradox.
Right.
Is another word, and it's an event that's contrary to the expectation. And so it's paradox, and so it kind of creates this sensation. And then it ties a little bit to the concept of epiphany. Paradox often can be an epiphany where we go, oh, wow.
Yeah,
make
sense in a new way.
Yes, or I had never thought about that before. And again, that is an experience of awe. And so it's remarkable, it's wonderful. And then thumazo, which we don't have an English word for, that word is that astonishment. It is like shocking astonishment. It's like a person to even jump a little bit. And some people are more prone to thumazo than others. Wonderful word that we have not transliterated into English. That's so marvel at, be surprised and shocked and that kind of thing. It is interesting that, and this different sidebar, but it comes to my mind is that, we watch a lot of digital media and they're is almost like a attraction, and it can actually be an addiction to that adrenaline rush that comes from things that thumazo you on the screen. Right. And in fact, that's a pretty big draw of a lot of stories.
Yeah.
You know, it's why you always have to have a fight scene and a, and a big chase scene. I mean, that's not the only reason, but it's like that stimulation that goes that way. And I would say that that's a person just has to decide for themselves if that's actually an experience of awe or if it's something else that's going on for them. Yeah. But that doesn't matter. That's kind of the side of what we're talking about. So all of that being said, I'm going to put you and your mother right here close to the table. And I'm going to read passages that have to do with end times, because today's episode, all of that to get to what the episode is about. It is about awe and, the title, Awe and the End of Times, Awe, the End of All Things, whatever. But more from, because there's a ton of apocalyptic stories that get told now, all the way from ecological and climate change apocalypse to the Christian venue of the end time, the return of Christ or the end of the world and so forth. So, and then there's tons of interpretations about that. So if we get into that, that's okay, but we're not going to dwell a lot of time on possibilities of that meeting, because really what I want to do is I want to read some of these core passages and then want to ask us. So if imagine that you were experiencing that, describe the awe.
Mom, I'll let you go first.
Oh, I haven't read the passage.
I was going to say, we haven't read it yet, Micah, I'm pretty sure.
Just preempting.
You may instantly come up with something. Uh-huh. So to
prime the pump.
That's what I did there.
So to prime the pump, to put you on the spot on a different way, all three of us, is, was there any experience of awe that comes to mind for yourself in the last 7 days?
Oh, my goodness.
No, if we go back further, I had the one with the...
Oh, yeah, let's go back further.
Go further.
Yeah, with the ice crystal that formed between the panes of our deck.
Right.
It made that beautiful frozen snowflake design that was...
Yeah.
That was a moment of awe for me.
Yep.
Really cool.
Well, and at the latitude of Nebraska north, the one, you know, there's not a lot of pluses of living in Nebraska in February.
I was afraid my ice
fishing buddies would beg to differ, but we did have really solid ice in January. It's already started warming up, and I don't know how safe it is to ice fish right now. But for me, the southern skies, both dawn and sunset, but even sometimes during the day, because of the way that the cloud formations go and stuff around here, they just create a huge infinite variety of marvelous moments to just look at it, all the way from color to design to shape and all that kind of stuff.
Lots of pink color.
Yeah. And anybody who is, you know, who does look at sunsets or sunrises for kind of that reset, that awe reset, the wonder of going from kind of gray to then moving toward the pinkish, sometimes in red or orange, all depends on what's happening there. But, and then just the wispiness is often what makes it more amazing. So that's for me. And we have a nice view to the south from our house. And so we can see the southern sky a lot at this time of year. So it's really a plus. Nice. Now in the summer, it can be pretty hot on the south side of the house. but in the winter, that's the plus. So that's all.
All right.
Cool.
So with that in mind, kind of just get us thinking. So I'm going to read you Romans 8, 18 to 23, which is not typically quoted about end times.
Okay.
But it, in my mind, sets up the stage for what we're talking about, which here it goes. This is a New Revised Standard. I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory about to be revealed to us. So about to be revealed. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the children of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not of its own will, but by the will of the one who subjected it in hope, that the creation itself will be set free from its enslavement to decay, and will obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning together as it suffers together the pains of labor. And not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit grown inwardly while we wait for adoption, the redemption of our bodies. I might just say that for me, theologically and biblically, the core aspect of the end of times is the resurrection of the body, the resurrection of human bodies. And that is the piece that has to be there. Otherwise, it is less than or it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, we're thinking about that we live in a world, and I think that in a world where, you know, kind of like, you know, push away the political climate, push away even a lot of scientific disagreement, when we talk about the stress on the creation, and let's just, the one piece of the creation, the planet, there's moments that I think, I think the creation is groaning right now.
Right. Yeah.
If nothing else, to adjust to a growing human population on the planet. And that sets us to where, I guess what I want us to think about or to be aware of is that the end of times, the end of this era, is not simply about human beings.
Right.
It's the whole creation. So that's why some of these things are going to have metaphors or stories into all of creation, not just humans. So with that in mind, here comes some typical texts then about end times. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, 35 to 55, in talking about the resurrection. So that's the core of that chapter. So someone may ask, how will the dead be raised? And what kind of bodies will they have? What a foolish question. When you put a seed into the ground, it doesn't grow into a plant unless it dies first. And what you put in the ground is not the plant that will grow, but only the bare seed of wheat or whatever you're planting. Then God gives it, talks the plant, the new body he wants it to have. A different plant grows from each kind of seed. So similarly, there are different kinds of flesh, and it goes on about for humans and birds and animals and all this kind of stuff. And there's different kinds of glory, and the sun has one kind of glory, the moon has another kind of glory, the stars another, and even the stars differ from each other in glory. It's the same way with the resurrection of the dead. Our earthly bodies are planted in the ground when we die, which, again, that's the typical, and it is truly a strong reference to Jewish practice, that they did put bodies in the ground. And so he's using that to build this metaphor, and one of the key metaphors about this. And so then he says that our bodies are planted in the ground. They'll be raised to live forever. Our bodies are buried in brokenness. They'll be raised in glory, and they are buried in weakness, but they'll be raised in strength. They're buried as natural human bodies, but they'll be raised as spiritual bodies. For just as there are natural bodies, so also there are spiritual bodies. And then there's a lot. I mean, it's a pretty full chapter.
Right.
But there it is. You become conscious at the end, and you go, I don't think this is the same body I had before.
Yay!
So I'm pressing because, okay, so awe. Mm-hmm. So what would awe you? And this is totally, doesn't matter if it's, we don't have to be accurate here. Right, we only have to be accurate to ourselves. Because now we're asking our imagination. When I read that and I go, okay, because I grew up on a farm and I do gardening. Both. Yep. So I've dealt with seed and plants and harvest and all that kind of stuff. But seeds and plants is the metaphor here. And it's like, grain of wheat, what the plant looks like. Both have a beauty, but they're certainly very different. Yet at the same time, there is a relationship between the two. So basically the awe moment is, what comes to your mind when you think of having a body as different as the grain to the plant, as your body you have now to what is going to be your eternal spiritual body?
Well,
you mean, what do we think about that body's going to be?
Yeah. Well, maybe even what, there's no right or wrong answer here.
I want to back up for just a second.
Sure.
I think it's kind of interesting that the Romans verses framed it in the, couched it in childbirth as if all of this is childbirth.
Birth pangs, yes.
Yes. When one of mom's main awe experiences was
giving birth to a child.
Yeah. And just how it kind of the, maybe not more epiphany than paradox, but one of those where the experience was just never quite what she was expecting, even though she went through it more than once. Mm-hmm. But just kind of that feeling of love for this new life. And I think that's got to be a intentional metaphor there for,
I agree,
kind of setting up the frame of mind. It's like the kind of feeling that a mother is going to have with this new life, where this is something new and not expected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's expanding your love in a way you never knew was going to happen.
Right.
And so you're thinking in terms of?
For everyone. Yeah. Kind of a collective, because it doesn't frame it in an individual, it frames it as a collective whole planet. So this has a whole communal experience, everyone experiencing love in a new way that they never thought possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is core to the nature of God, is love. In fact, that's the strongest argument of why God created anyhow.
Right.
Was
an expression of love. And you could even say for us to become objects of his love.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The love of God. Yeah. So again, I know I'm pressing this as we record these things, first thing on a Saturday morning. But it works well for us as far as schedule, but sometimes our creative, we kind of have to pump our minds a little bit
into it.
But so the earth, back in the Romans passage, the earth is like a mother ready for childbirth with birth pangs.
Yep.
There it is. And that's an interesting thought, which then again tells us, let's just let that metaphor live and go, well, so then whatever the place of abode for our eternal abode is also something akin to this planet giving birth to the next rendition.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
I mean, not that the powers comes from God, but it's like the seed, or in this sense, the mother with the womb.
Mm-hmm.
And that, there's a bit of difference, and for me, I understand the biology of childbirth, but I never experienced it. I was the dad who was completely in awe, I always think that, at least for me, there is a respect that comes from having my wife, the mother of our children, go through that, and it's like, okay, happy it's you. Now I'm gonna... What can I do to help? but we don't want to digress too much. It is, I think the reason that we doesn't like quickly come to mind is because we don't sing songs about this in church. We don't teach this much. We don't talk about the anticipation of here we are. We're little seeds in this world, and our seeds are going to go take off in a new burst of life and be resurrected bodies.
I think, you know, often it's talked about, like, you know, you'll be healthier, not the physical limitations you have, but kind of hitting me like now with the thought of, you know, experiencing something new that you didn't expect. You know, as humans, we're very curious and we're always trying to push further than our human bodies can do. See further, go further, see into spectrums of light that we can't see. And just makes me wonder, like, maybe there'll be new senses. Maybe there'll be sharper senses and we can, you know, taste colors or, you know, see into the infrared or something like that.
All right.
That would be awe-inspiring.
That would be awe-inspiring. And that's the kind of, I mean, I appreciate you saying that. That hadn't crossed my mind exactly in that way. Again, for some reason, my brain always wants to go to size. Like I'm going to be, you know, like 10 feet tall instead. You know, but I go, I don't know why I do that. I don't know why, you know, but something about that. And so, but the thing is, if I'm 10 feet tall, then, and again, when you think about the, what seems like a little bit of the detail in this 1 Corinthians 15 passage is Paul's going, oh, there's this and there's that and everything's different. And I'm going, okay, so maybe as resurrected human beings, we're going to look a lot different from each other than we even do now. Hmm. There's going to be a more diversity than even now. I don't know. I mean, there is quite a diversity in the human race as it is.
Maybe you'll be like Ant-Man where you can shrink and grow. So you can go and like sit on the little flower, but then you can go and jump on top of it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you too.
Or like isn't it Captain America? Am I thinking of the right name? The superhero that can fly around out? No, the lady.
Oh, no, that's Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel, thank you. I knew I didn't say the right thing. Captain Marvel, where all of a sudden she discovers, so this is like awe in the storyline. Mm-hmm. She is out in outer space, and all of a sudden she doesn't need air support.
Yeah.
And I'm going, okay, well, there's that. I always thought when I saw that movie, I thought, why do we even have any other superheroes? We don't need any other superheroes, just her.
Just her, I think she'd agree with you.
Oh, boy. Okay, now back to you.
No, but that's what I'm saying. For me, it is, so we would have a broader, potentially maybe a broader range of the kinds of environments that we can survive in, for example. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. So that would be awesome to me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know I could breathe underwater. You know, kind of thing. That would be awesome.
I think it's going to be awesome to not have all the aches and pains and limits with our body, you know, and being able to totally use the whole capacity of our minds.
Mm-hmm. Well, pain, the sensation of pain is actually a good thing because it's also pleasure. Pleasure and pain.
Yeah, they're related.
You know, they're related. And so I'm thinking, okay, so when we think about we don't want pain anymore, which the scriptures do say that kind of thing.
Right.
So then how is it that there's a threshold that there's no pain, but we have pleasure?
Mm-hmm. I think maybe spicy would be a good way to look at that because some people really hate like that sensation of burning on their tongue. Some people like they just crave that. Mm-hmm. So you can experience it slightly differently. So maybe you can register pain, but it isn't in a way that causes you anguish.
Right.
Because you know everything's going to be fine already.
Yeah. And you're talking about what the Bible in Romans 8 is calling decay.
Yeah.
The body is not functioning by design.
Right. Because that's part of pain causes fear because pain means that your body's being hurt and you don't want your body to be hurt.
Yeah. Or let's just be honest.
Yeah.
Pain at our age is reminding us that.
Yeah.
Mortality.
That the wheels are beginning to fall off.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. So, but awe is, again, that confidence. So I think, you know, like lots of times when I wake up in the morning, you know, I have a gratitude thought in my mind just going, yeah, this is really cool. I can just swing out of bed and put my feet on the ground. Yeah, that's I'm thankful for that. Well,
it's a good day.
To me, the awe would be to be able to not abuse my body, but to just have this new body that functions at 100%.
Yeah.
At least that's my assumption here. But yeah, I think so. So that's 1 Corinthians 15. I let me jump in with another piece of that, because it's quite a lengthy discussion. And so here's verse 51. So Paul continues this conversation about resurrection with this. Let me reveal to you a wonderful secret. So this already has awe kind of hiding behind it. We will not all die, but we will all be transformed. And it'll happen in a moment, in the blink of an eye, when the last trumpet is blown. So again, these things are loaded with biblical interpretation about how these things happen. But just at face value, you're doing your favorite physical activity.
And you hear a trumpet go off.
You hear a trumpet in the distance. And all of a sudden, your body is transformed from this seed to the new plant. Okay, describe that.
Hallelujah.
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry about that. You'll have to edit that.
I need a new eardrum.
I'm pressing our imaginations here. And you know what? Exactly. So is that awe for you?
Yes. No, you know, the joints, the aches, the pains are... And that you can just move. I mean, I figure you can run and jump and not hurt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
She could walk Jackson without him carrying her
away.
That's
right.
I could ride him. No. I need to edit
just imagine that. Jackson's my giant dog.
Hey, this is all on the playing field for us right now, because we're talking about we have these metaphorical and kind of picture, to help us to understand this. But I do, people think about that. And of course, then there's a passage in 1 Thessalonians, which is this happens for some people in the air. You're transformed in the air versus on the ground. But we're keeping our feet on the ground in this one, because it doesn't say we're in the air on this one. So we're just going to leave it there. Okay. Sometimes we have to let a passage we don't want to just drag into it every other passage.
Right.
This is what Paul said on this particular circumstance. And he said, we're all going to be transformed. So I'm looking at it as, I don't know. There's no, in this passage, he doesn't define anything else. Now, we know that it's possible there's more to it than just that. Because one, I plant a seed in my garden, it doesn't immediately become the beanstalk that goes to the giant in heaven.
Right.
So if I'm the seed, if my body is a seed for the next body that I have, then... we don't know the process, although the main clue we have is in the twinkling of an eye or a blink of an eye, it says here. So that does seem to be pretty instantaneous. So what else? I mean, there's not, other than fiction, is there a lot of very many instantaneous changes that are that, even close to that big in the natural realm?
Like a fire igniting.
Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking a volcano suddenly bursting out.
Okay.
That's lightning.
Lightning. Yeah, that's instantaneous. That's like a blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are some, again, it's not instantaneous, but there are some organisms that multiply quickly, like grow quickly compared to other organisms, but still, blink of an eye. So... I think that I'll be aware that it happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then it's like all of a sudden it's like cresting a ridge on a hike, and all of a sudden there's that magnificent scene, and you just go, I didn't know this was here. And so it would be almost like I had no idea this is what this body was gonna be like.
Yeah.
And how long will it take to become self-aware of all of the functions of that body?
Well, you got eternity, so.
Good point, Micah.
So anyway, and that then is to the point of Paul finishes up that conversation in Corinthians with basically saying, when our dying bodies have been transformed. And the RSV I like here, because it just feels like more of a natural kind of talk, that in our best moments, we are aware of the reality that we live in a dying body. It doesn't matter what our age is. But our dying bodies have been transformed into bodies that will never die. And that's pretty straightforward language. And then this scripture will be fulfilled, which is, I looked that up. I can't remember which Old Testament prophet that is. Death is swallowed up in victory. So, oh, death, where is your victory? Oh, death, where is your sting? So it's a poetic way of just saying that the pain and the despair of living in a body that is mortal is going to be done. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine, you know?
It is hard to imagine.
But it's fun to imagine.
Yeah. So I think that's awe. And I think that when we think about end times, rather than always focusing on the apocalyptic aspect, we look at this awe aspect, which is, wow, we are going to have a new existence. Mm-hmm. And the details of that existence are already planned for us. So that moves us to then, we want to just take a step in Philippians chapter 3, verses 20 and 21, which is talking about, since we know this kind of thing about ourselves, that our dying bodies are going to become eternal bodies, that we're going to be different in all of this, but what about right now? And that's what this is addressed to. So then he moves into a different metaphor than seed and plant, but he's talking about now citizenship and kingdom kind of thing. So he says, our citizenship is in heaven, and it's from there that we're expecting a savior, the Lord Jesus Christ. He will transform the body of our humiliation, which is his New Revised Standard, or lowly body, as the NIV says, that it may be conformed to the body of his glory by the power that also enables him to make all things subject to himself. Now, that is full of important encouragement. But to stay on our theme of our bodies, it does give us another clue. And that is, if we read the resurrection appearances of Jesus in the Gospels, he's saying that we're going to be conformed to the body of his glory. Now, that's interpretive, but what if we do have like similar characteristics that Jesus demonstrated in his resurrected body? So remember what they are from your Bible reading. What was Jesus' body able to do after he was resurrected?
Teleport,
okay.
Sorry, it's my favorite superpower.
What else?
Well, he already was able to heal before his resurrected body.
Yep.
And raised from the dead.
Yeah, teleport. Did he actually walk through the wall or did he beam in?
He was both. Just suddenly there.
Yeah, just suddenly there. Okay, so there's an interesting, and again, I'm thinking we don't have a record in the Gospels of everything that body could do. We also know, again, this is theological, that may not have been the absolute final body.
Right.
And that is, that's centuries of debate right there. So I don't necessarily want to kick that can over, except to say that there are interesting implications, whichever way you go with that. But again, maybe baby steps, maybe what the human, what his disciples could process in that moment. And if he'd been there in like a full realm, eternal body, which we do have, again, metaphorical allusions to it in the book of Revelation of what that body looks like. So, you know, for one, light is one.
I mean, there's a good possibility that since they had regular bodies, they could not see and sense his body in its full glory.
Very good.
That's true. Our vision is limited.
Good man. Hey, our resident expert now is Micah on the eternal body thing going on here. So, again, that's a passage that just totally gets neglected, but what does it do? That whole Philippians 3 passage is about, okay, so our citizenship's in heaven. We are on a path toward a new experience.
Right.
And how many churches, how many Christians really get bogged down in this life, this world, without keeping our eyes on that future hope as an awe experience. So then our we want to touch on Revelation. I chose Revelation 21 because it's talking about the new dwelling, the new city, the new Jerusalem. And so it kind of ties into that everything's going to be new.
Right.
And new as in new and improved of the old, or new as in absolutely totally new. And that's another interesting Bible interpretation debate all the way from the earth, the place of residence of human beings in eternity versus not. And so if the earth is going to be totally destroyed and like no longer exist, and there's going to be a new one made, is that the new? Or is it that it's going to be this earth that is remade, just like our bodies are a seed that become a new body? So this earth is a seed that becomes the new earth. So it's not like it's totally separate from that design. And so then you go, so are we still dealing with regular atomic physics here? Or are we going to do a new physics?
Who cares?
New physics.
But anyway, this one says, verse 3 is where I want to pick it up. I heard a loud shout from the throne saying, look, God's home. So we're John is seeing this in a vision, but let's try to imagine this in our initial experiences of eternity. I saw a new heaven, new earth. The old heaven, old earth had disappeared, and the sea was also gone, which sea is often, sometimes a metaphor for people, like the whole multitude of people, but it could actually be the actual ocean kind of sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven like a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. If we let that passage tell us one thing, it should be this. In the end of times, God comes to us. We don't go to him. Also challenges the thinking that heaven is somewhere out there. Just to throw a different speculation, just other dimension, in essence, right where we are, if that's even a word you can use with dimension. And so there's this transformation, this newness that comes, and God is moving toward us, not us toward him. And I think that again, really is, to me, is awesome, is that we aren't left adrift, you know, like an astronaut in a survival suit trying to drift toward safety in eternity. It is that God is coming to us to live amongst us, which is what it goes on to say in Revelation. I heard a shout from the throne saying, God, look, God's home is now among his people. And we go, well, I thought that, you know, we are the temple of the Holy Spirit, so God is at home on this earth right now. And that is true. But again, maybe that's like the seed versus full thing. It's like this. In fact, in the epistles, it does talk about the Holy Spirit as like a deposit within us, like the guarantee, as some translations say. And so it could be that that's our guarantee that God has come to be with us, but there will be a, we are with God in another sense, in a new sense. So again, I for those that are listening, I want to just be gracious to my poor family members here who don't get a ton of warning on this stuff.
None warning.
Because part of our life is, I'm always throwing these crazy things out. Well, actually, we all throw out crazy things, or are things that we haven't thought of before, which again sets us up for awe. Mm-hmm. We haven't thought about it before. Now here's something. Mm-hmm. And so when we think about God coming into us, there is a new way that he is making his home amongst us or with us. What kind of awe experience does that possibly bring to your mind?
Mom just pointed at me. That one I think I'd have to think about for a bit.
Okay. Well, and others that are listening will probably have to think about it a little bit too.
Well, it's easier to picture... Yeah. You know, what we think, Jesus.
Okay.
Because he was a human. I mean, we don't know exactly what he looked like, but he was human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually wiping away the tears, taking us over and saying, here, have this fruit off this tree. It'll make you feel better, or whatever. Right.
Well, yeah. In fact, that's the very next sentence is where it says God himself will be with them. And then verse 4, he will wipe every tear from their eyes, and there will be no more death or sorrow or crying or pain. All these things are gone forever. So you're envisioning the interaction like humans would do to wipe tears, which that's kind of what comes to my mind.
Yeah.
And so Have you ever had someone serving you in close, you know, like, let's say like in a medical type situation, or even just in a family closeness where you're sick and so a person is like, you know, cooling your head, making you comfortable. So think about that being God. And in this, there is, in Revelation, you can make a pretty strong case that the presence of God the Father and God the Son and God the Spirit are all separate presences. Mm-hmm. I mean, there, at least that's how it's described. I know we believe in one God. So, but the actual interaction, and again, theological theory, kind of a go-to one is that since Jesus has the body and he'll have the glorified body, then it's him that's doing this, right, this actual physical contact, because God is spirit. God doesn't have physicality that can do that. I'm going to wait and see what awesome thing happens myself. But so it's saying that you're thinking in terms of the actual intimacy of someone dabbing your tears and so forth.
And comforting you.
Yeah, giving you a hug. Mm-hmm. And again, that's a, you know, in popular art for Christians, the one that's come up in the last 20 to 30 years is this picture of somebody arriving on the clouds, which, by the way, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, we may still actually have our feet on the ground, but being hugged by Jesus.
Uh-huh. So if that's a physical hug, then God can give you a spirit-to-spirit hug.
Yes. Then,
and we don't know what that feels like yet.
No, because it defies the physical sense of feeling. Mm-hmm.
So then if you push that further, then God could wipe away your spiritual tears as well.
Mm-hmm.
So like the deep grief in you can be comforted as well, not just the physical signs of it.
But in one sense, we experience that some.
Yeah.
I mean, I've experienced that when I'm in, you know, deeply emotional in a quiet time and stuff, and felt God comforting me, his presence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, not actually feeling a hand wipe away a tear, but.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And as I was, I mean, the New Testament indicates to us that the Holy Spirit is that presence, that is the deposit, the guarantee that we have. And it's almost like for us, so if we want to have a sense of, or we want to reflect on the sense of awe about in the end of it all, then we, as we have those experiences that are unexplainable, which falls into Dr. Keltner's description of the awe that comes from a spiritual experience, or possibly even wrestling with life and death, and that awe that is, for lack of a better word, an awareness within, and you know, can't even verbalize an awareness of the presence of spirit within us. And I think that that maybe is one of the ways that we can look at the future is based on those experiences of present. I mean, how do we reflect about what our excuse me. Sorry about that. I think maybe it's not just the coffee. It's actually a tad bit of emotion, to tell you the truth, is that it's a wonder to think about. And we tend to focus on the physical side, but I don't think we focus on the spiritual reality of the end of it all. That we're more impressed with the ride than what's going on inside and the spirit realm. And maybe it's because our spirits are, we're timid about expressing that being connected to our own spirits, let alone the Spirit of God. And so I think that that's, again, I think that sometimes with being so apocalyptic about end times, we're missing the real heart of it. And that is that God is with us now in a deposit way through the Spirit. And that these passages promise that the most spectacular aspect is that God, as the English translation says, God's home is now among his people.
Yeah.
And that's like the joy of having your family around you. It's like the joy of having your closest friends around you. And that you know that when you walk into the next room or when you walk across the street, that dear person is right there. And I think that that's lost when we get so caught up in some of the other stuff that gets focused on now. So that's Revelation. And then to just make sure we see, notice the last sentence in that little narrative, the one sitting on the throne, which is God the Father, said, as John was seeing the vision, "Look, I am making everything new." And I think that's part of the awe of the end. And so when I think, again, that's a little bit underemphasized, is the new is, and that's going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. So we can wrap up with, actually, as we just want to wrap up, I want to do Colossians 1, 15 to 20, without a ton of comment. Okay. But anything else that the two of you want to just say as impressions about awe and the end of it all?
Bum?
It'll be awesome.
Very good, very good.
It will be.
I think my big takeaway from today is just clear, going back to the beginning, just the metaphor of childbirth and how we're going to be experiencing life in a new way. We'll be experiencing love in a new way. And mm-hmm. I think that expansion of love in a way you never thought possible, that's very fascinating.
Yeah, thank you. That is amazing.
What about you?
I think the statement that God now is making his home with his people, mm-hmm. and to realize that all of the barriers that are within my own psyche, within my own soul, which is technically psyche. I want to get technical about the Greek word. The things that make it to where I don't always realize that God's presence is within me in a deposit way, you know, that beginning way, a seed way, that will be gone. And I kind of look forward to that. And I think that will be awesome, is how that will transform mm-hmm. me and therefore also transform all people. That the battle, the struggle, that am I getting this right? Am I actually perceiving God, or is this just my imagination? All of these kinds of things, right. that the self-doubts, I think the awe will be that settledness that comes. And that is an aspect of awe, is one. It is the, I'm going to look at things differently. And I think that that part of the experience will be awesome, because the doubts will be removed. So to carry us along with all of that, here are the last thoughts from Colossians 1, 15 to 20. So he is talking about the Son, the beloved Son of God, whom he transferred the kingdom to his Son, and in whom we have redemption. He, Jesus, is the image of the invisible God. And notice it doesn't say he's not saying he was the image of the invisible God, because at this point when Paul writes this, Jesus has already ascended into heaven. So he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. Again, birth metaphor. For in him all things in heaven and on earth were created, things visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or powers, rulers or powers. All things have been created through him and for him. And so again, gift. Creation was for the Son. He himself is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He's the head of the body, the church. He's the beginning, the firstborn from the dead. Again, that metaphor. So that he might come to have first place in everything. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. And through him God was pleased to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, by making peace through the blood of his cross. Revelation says God is now making his home among men, but God has been introducing us to that experience all along the way. And I think that's our basis to have an anticipation of awe in the future. We'd love to hear from you with comments, questions, and your stories. Email us at knowgod@tonykafka.com. You can find more resources on our Patreon page or on our website, tonykafka.com.